Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Casella.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Casella.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Casella.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, buckle up, folks. Here we go. An hour of Jaguars NFL conversation across the airwaves of News Talk WOKV and Jaguars Radio. Live from Everbank Field, Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Boselli, and, of course, Jeff Loggeman sitting across the table. Joe Fortunato here, pushing the buttons, taking your calls, and adding witty banter whenever he feels.
Adding color.
Occasionally.
To the show.
Today he doesn't look like he's quite ready.
He looks
Orlando.
Like he's sleeping.
He was in Orlando for a couple of days. He hit it hard.
Paradise Party.
He's got no kids. You know, he and Linda, did they just
rocking Disney all night long?
You bet. You can tell. So anyway, the phone might not get answered today. If you hear this, it's me telling Joe he needs to answer the phone.
A little bit. You got a little sun there, Joe.
Here we go.
The sun happened Friday out watching practice. That's where the sun came from.
It was a scorcher.
Yeah, that was nasty.
Friday was a scorcher for the. Imagine if you're a rookie, tryout veteran, tryout rookie, whatever you are, and you come out in the first practice, it's like 98 degrees, the heat index is 110, and you've been just, you know, hanging out with your boys, you know, waiting on the draft, and then the first day of practice, it's just yelling in heat and yelling in heat.
And you're thinking, kids from Colorado.
Why didn't I sign with Minnesota?
Yeah, I talked to. Vikings have any spots open? Kendrick Adams right after the first practice, and you know, you're just kind of making conversation, and he was over under the bleachers, and you know, you're talking, starting the interview, and I said, boy, it heats something, huh? And there was a little pause, and he goes, yeah.
And he played at LSU.
Yeah, I mean, they were all feeling
it's pretty hot, which, over there, yeah, as well.
Yeah, you could tell the first practice for sure.
It was
a test. You know, the rookie mini camp was all about testing and seeing what kind of shape they were in, and really shock them, to let them know that if you're going to be a part of this team, when you come back, you better be in shape. And number two is they wanted to see who had the desire and who was going to fight through it. I mean, that was about as strong of a test as I've ever seen for a rookie camp.
And it wasn't easy for me either, Jeff. I mean, I'll be
you're candid as always.
I'm a little more ready.
Sunblock on.
Sure.
Had to do without a little bit of water for the first part of the practice, but you managed. You did well.
I mean, experienced vet.
And you did they bring you back? Are they bringing you back for the
obviously
for
there was nobody else.
So what do the Jaguars get out of that? The 5-6 players they can add to their roster? Anything more?
I think first and foremost is that you send the message, and the message is that if you're going to be a part of here, it's got to be start with number one is effort, and number two, the lesson I think that they learn is that you better be in shape to play at this level. And I think those are probably the two most important messages that you can send to them. But then also, you find out what kind of desire, how they're going to fight through it, what kind of shape they're in. There was at one point that I thought that one of the tryout veteran guys, and I remember his name was Dexter Larimore, a first-year guy from Ohio State. I didn't think he was going to make it through practice. I mean, there was a couple guys that looked like they were just fighting through just to make it through individual periods, you know. But then you really got to evaluate them, I thought, the second day. The first day, it was, you know, it was like survival of the fittest. And then the second day, you got to evaluate more of the athleticism, and some guys stood out. You know, you definitely could evaluate some of the guys, but a good weekend. And I continued to be impressed with the coaching on the field. There was one particular moment, and John, I don't know if you saw this or heard this, but it was during Saturday's practice, and they're running a team drill, which the practices didn't have a lot of team stuff.
Right.
You know, when you have a kind of a tryout camp, you kind of want to limit the exposure, I think, with a lot of these guys, and because some of them you're not going to want, some of them you do want. But Mike Mularkey, the head coach, at one point asked the draft pick Brandon Marshall, when had broken the defensive huddle, what's the down and distance? And Brandon Marshall, you know, he had to look to the sideline to see the marker. You know, but I mean, just details right. Like that, you know, teaching a young player, you got to have an awareness. And from the very first camp that this guy was exposed to, the head coach is quizzing guys to see what where their awareness level is at. I loved it.
Yeah, the attention to detail, you know, and again, it's four mini camp practices, so you can't tell everything. But the attention to detail and the unwillingness of a coach to let something slide is markedly different.
Now, Jerry Sullivan.
Yeah.
I'm just going there.
Nonstop coaching machine.
And he sees everything. On Friday, there was a drill where they were running between rolled up towels, and they were supposed to cut at a very specific point in the second row of towels. And one guy didn't cut right, and he said, whoa. On what toe was your pressure? Mm-hmm. I said, what? I mean, that was the kind of detail we just have not seen around.
That's called coaching.
He had one wide receiver, and I remember lining up, and it was going to run. He was going to run a curl route, and he wanted the alignment on the outside of the numbers. And there is no vagueness to the outside of the numbers. The outside of the numbers means right on the outside of the numbers. It doesn't mean 2 feet outside of that, you know, or 6 inches outside of that. I mean, talk about detail, you know. And a lot of coaches and coaching staffs, I think, when you have a mini camp, a rookie mini camp, the approach sometime is, hey, look, 95% of these guys or 90% of these guys, you know, or not that number, but it's 80%, whatever.
A large number.
Whatever it is. A large number of these guys aren't even going to be here. Why bother coaching hard? But you could tell that this staff took it serious, and they took it as if, hey, look, you know, we're going to find some gems in here. We're going to coach our tails off. I don't care who it is. We're going to coach.
Well, and it's a couple things. One, the reason they coach like that, Jeff, is because that's who they are. I mean, that is what this staff is. That's what Mike Mularkey is. That's the guys he's assembled. That's how they coach. I mean, that's how they coach. If they're coaching, rolling out of the bed and coaching, you know, if the four of us went out there and tried to do drills, they're going to coach us hard or whoever it is because that's their personality. And that's why they've had success. And that's why they're good coaches. And then the purpose of those mini camps often is to throw as much as you can at the young guys and to see how they assimilate and to see how they handle the pressure. I remember the first mini camp here after the draft, and it was different back then because they could do more. There was less rules, and all of us are there. And I remember it was just like drinking out of a fire hose, and we are going to give you as much stuff, and we're going to see how you handle it and how you can take all that information and then react on the field. And coaches understand that you're not going to get everything, but they want to see how you handle the pressure in the situation. And then the third thing, it gives them an opportunity with the young guys to start installing the game plan in the playbook so that when the OTAs and the veterans come back in, they are not starting from ground zero. They're going to be playing enough catch-up. And so I remember it used to frustrate me as I became a veteran is you would install – first mini camp, then you would install throughout all of the OTAs, then you would leave, and you'd come back, and you'd start all over and install everything like you had never heard it before in training camp. And for veterans, that's extremely frustrating. It's like, okay, I know what to do on 35 zone. I mean, I've been running this for 5-6 years now. And
it's like Groundhog Day.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Veteran standpoint
but for
sometimes.
But for the rookies, it's critical because it's so much information. It's like learning a new language and picking up, I mean, they know how to play football, but they don't know how to play Mike Mularkey Jaguar football, and now they have to learn that.
And the other thing that I'd never even thought of this, but Gene Smith brought it up to me, you know, about this rookie camp. He said, look, you know, when we get all these guys in here, this is a great opportunity for us to not only teach, you know, the guys that we expect to be here, but some of the guys may not be here, but we may be calling upon them at some point during the year. And so the more that we can expose them to our system, then if we end up bringing them back, then at least they have some familiarity with the program and with the system, and then we can hit the ground running with them a little bit faster once we get them back.
All right, this portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by our friends at Football Fanatics. This time out, then more with Jeff, Tony, John, and you at 355-NFL-1. Back after this on Jaguars Radio. All right, here we go. More Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Well, we're just talking about some of the folks that we watched on the field last week during rookie minicamp.
And the only one that anybody asked me about all week long,
the punter.
It's crazy.
The first thing
Pascelli
says, yeah.
Well, because
you've got to be kidding me.
That's all I hear about. I'm like, we drafted Justin Blackman the first round. Well, yeah, but what about the punter? Why do we draft the punter? You know, why do we? I'm like, I don't know why we did, but, Joe, you know, we got Justin Blackman.
The leg is as big as advertised.
Is it?
It's big. Oh, yeah.
It's big.
Yeah, when he kicked it, and I don't have a stopwatch, but it's one of those things where he kicks it, and your eyes are going up, and you're looking, and you're like, and you got time to see where he's standing at while it's in the air, to look back, see where he's standing at, and then count the yardage, and then still catch the ball before it's caught. I mean, it's that kind of hang time. Yeah. I mean, it's
and he puts the ball down the field with
he
that
can kick
kind
it.
Of time.
Can he? Is he? Does he have directional skill? Can
oh, yeah. he? They didn't use him that way at Cal. He was a rugby style punter at Cal, and the word is yes, he's got exceptional directional ability. But the big thing is a scout walked by me after the first set of drills, and I heard him say, 5-4, in terms of hang time. You know, when he first got started, he was driving the ball down the field and hanging it high. Here's all I knew. I heard boom, boom. I mean, you could hear that ball from 3 fields away.
Wow.
So
yeah, he looked good.
And I think the biggest question coming out of camp this rookie, is did Justin Blackmon taking the last day off because of a sore foot? And, you know, it sounds like it's nothing. I mean, that's what's being reported. But you never like your first rounder. And I know that by, you know, personal experiences, you know, getting hurt in training camp is the first pick. It's like, it's never good. I mean, people speculate. I mean, Osher was joking when I hurt my knee after Logman, the idiot, decided to bull rush on a wet field. But we'll leave that for another
Should have had the proper footwear.
Oh, shut up. Everyone else is just working on speed moves, and Knucklehead says, I'm going to show the rookie what I can do. And
not playing those conditions in a game.
He's such an idiot. But anyways.
he didn't let you off the mat.
No, I mean, and just as my knee is buckling, he just is driving me. It's like, and then I think he sat there and taunted me afterwards after it happened. I got him back, though.
But I did the Pee Wee Herman.
I'd love to have a camera
As my kneecap's on the side of my leg. But, you know, that happens. And, you know, Osher's joking. Chris Morton said my career's over.
I remember.
And obviously mine was an injury, much worse than – we're not comparing that to Justin Blackmon. But, I mean, even out there talking, you know, you listen and fans are like, what's wrong with them? You know, how bad is it? And it's, you know, and it's – you know, it's reported as a sore foot, but you never like – your top pick, the guy, missing any time, especially after 2 practices. And so, none of us know anything. I mean, all we can do is hope it's just a sore foot.
Will he be here during OTAs?
Yeah, supposed to be back this weekend to get ready for next week. I'm not sure what
obviously,
you know, day this weekend.
Different schools have different, you know.
Yeah, he's supposed to be back.
Well, Tony had asked me how he looked. And on Friday, I didn't watch him a ton, just mostly in team.
Right.
And they kind of. A lot of the draft picks, very limited reps in team, because you got a lot of those guys out there.
You don't want someone trying to prove a point.
Yeah,
getting one of them hurt.
You know, you a little too much exposure there for your draft picks. So he had limited reps in team. But the one thing I will say is that anything in his zip code he caught, he looked a little slowed on Saturday, and it almost looked like I was sitting there going, "Is he hurt?" You know, and that's I guess the foot kind of came out after that. Mm-hmm. But he catches everything. And the other 2 draft picks that I watched a lot the first day, which is where I spent most of my time at, was with the second-round pick and the Jarris Pendleton, who was seventh-round pick from Ashland. And I thought they looked good. Boy, Joe Cullen, the defensive line coach, I mean, he just wore those guys out.
But, Jeff, tell me, because I didn't see him, and I asked you, does he have – what does he look like?
And Andre Branch.
Your comment to me about Andre Branch is he's long, lean, athletic. And my first question is, does he have anything in the trunk that he can push people around?
Yeah, and when they got the team drills, I mean, he held his ground.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of guys that you would think that are a little bit tentative to hold their ground would be more apt to show it when there's no pads on. And he was stout during team. You know, he's a 260-pound guy, but he's real – I mean, he's long. And he's athletic, and
so he's gonna have to learn how to use leverage, though, because those long guys, if they use their leverage in their arms, even if they're lighter, it's tough for an offensive tackle to move them out because they can get long and leverage it.
I like what I saw out of him, and I really liked what I saw out of Jarris Pendleton. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's not a guy that you say, boy, give him a couple years to develop.
He's a man.
He's already a man, and he moves very well in that box area. I mean, I think. He's going to be good, and I'm excited to see him when he gets his pads on. The other guy that I thought really stood out was Audric Ray, and I want to make sure I get
kid
that
right.
Kid
from Tulsa.
Yeah, because he was in camp last year, and he kind of came in as an end, and I remember having a conversation with Joe Cullen about it. I said, he's a tackle, and because he just moved more like a tackle. And he has come back. He's bigger. He moves really well, and he may have been one of the most impressive defensive linemen in camp. I mean, he stood out.
But it's so hard to tell.
With no pads.
Until you put pads on.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know.
I've always been.
It's the underwear league.
And I've always said, as an offensive lineman, and then which would go to a defensive lineman, it is so difficult to make evaluations. You can tell athletic ability. You can tell an offensive lineman if he can move his feet, good footwork, and can bend his knees. But besides that, how they're going to react when it's the pads are on and the, you know, and I'll go back. I remember the first minicamp as a rookie. And all through minicamp, I remember we're doing one-on-one pass drills. And I go against Jeff a lot, and it was not difficult. And no matter who it was, I mean, because all they could do is speed. And it was like, hey, this is, you know. And but then you go, all of a sudden, I can remember the first day we put the pads on, and we go to one-on-one pass rush, and I was going against Jeff again, and I had held my own, no problems. I'm like, hey, this is the big free agent. I feel pretty good. He's playing the league. And all of a sudden, the power move came in the bull rush. I was like, okay, this is a little bit different. As I was backing up to the quarterback, because I really felt good about good feet and kind of just being athletic. And then all of a sudden, the boom is lowered, and you put the pads on, and now you find out how tough a guy is, how he reacts, will he get in there, will he mix it up, and what's his technique like when you have to get down and move and get your hands going and move your feet with the pads on. And it really separates the men from the boys. I mean, that's when you really find out. I mean, you can tell a lot about the guys outside, the defense backs, the guys throwing the ball, punters, kickers. I mean, you can tell a lot. I don't think you can evaluate much on the interior offensive defensive line until you get the pads on.
No, but with a defensive tackle like Pendleton,
you can see movement and athletic ability.
That's what I wanted to see. But you know, he's big.
Even to the naked eye, though, he was quick. And I don't pretend to know what to look for the way you do, Jeff, but you could tell he had quickness and he looked like a man out there.
Tony, you should have seen like that joke. Cullen has this drill where they put the bags,
yeah,
the ones that are
right,
about 6 feet high, and he put them in real close together, and you got to kind of shuffle back through and it kind of zigzag through them, but they're real tight, so I mean, you got to have quick feet. And Otter Gray looked pretty good going through. Jairus Pendleton went through it. I mean, you're just like, wow.
Yeah,
I mean,
he danced through it.
He danced through it.
No, good way.
Poor old Larimore, first-year veteran tryout guy, fell down in the bags a couple times.
Some scout said it's a little different than 60-degree Ohio, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And I'll just say this about – and I'm not – and you can see athletic ability. You can see quick feet. But I could count – I need more than my 10 fingers to count of the guys – and, Jeff, you saw the same thing – who would come into OTAs, who were athletic – and they would be looking like they were could play football. And we'd line up in team or one-on-ones, and they'd be going crazy. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And they're great athletes. And you put the pads on.
It's a different game.
And they would literally disappear. And it's like, hey, wait a second. Where's the same guy with the underwear on that looked like a great athlete and looked like he was going to be, you know, a 10-sack guy? And now you can't break an egg because now you got to play football.
And just
that's all. I mean, I just caution.
Yeah. Quick plug here for Johnny O. The article on Kevin Elliott.
Ozone. Right here.
Very nice article.
I was going to tell you, that was the guy that caught my eye on Friday afternoon.
Yes.
He was explosive.
And Saturday he was just as good.
Okay.
And
he's a big cat now, 6'3".
Because I was sitting there watching
job.
Boykin.
Oh, thanks, Tony. Did you even read it?
The Virginia
no.
Tech guy. You know, Virginia Tech, free agent, rookie wide receiver, Jarrett Boykin.
Yes.
I mean, big name, you know, considered one of the top, you know, undrafted rookies, and he showed nothing. And Elliott showed a lot of skills, and the other guy that showed a lot of skills was Mike Brown, mm-hmm. who was signed off of that tryout camp, former quarterback from Liberty.
Well, those guys showed
now, Mike played receiver his first 2 years in college, so he was not completely out of water, but it had been 2 years since he had really played it extensively.
Well, they were good mm-hmm. enough. That Jarrett Dillard got his walking paper.
Jarrett Dillard and the undrafted free agent rookie Boykin.
Yeah, both said goodbye. All right, folks, time for news here at the bottom of the hour. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. And more Jaguars this week to follow. The news after this on Jaguars Radio. Baselli, you going to plug your party on Friday night?
Yeah, we have our big the Baselli Foundation, The Cut, our party Friday night at the Players, right behind, right in the parking lot behind the 16 Green, 17 T, all benefiting our after-school programs here in North Jacks. And I think tomorrow is the last day you can buy tickets online, and but there'll be tickets at the door. $100 general admission tickets. We have Sister Hazel playing, and there'll be a lot of food and drinks out there. And it's gonna be. We've sold 1,800 tickets so far. We have 200 left. So and they're going fast. So if you want to come and come on out.
What's the website?
TheCutParty.com.
There you go. 355 NFL 100.
Oh, and I'd like to. One of our big announcements is John Osher will be there.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
What are you having to pay to get him?
Ozone. It's a big talent fee. It's. I don't want to discuss it.
It's the ultimate in Ozone Live.
It's two, Friday night. It's two free tickets.
It's two figures.
Right. Two free tickets.
But Ozone. The Ozone will be out there, and he'll be doing a interactive session in the corner. About
live
the
chat.
Live chat.
Had that today there, Johnny. Oh, very nice.
What's that?
Very nice. You had it live today?
Yeah, live chat today. Yeah, we do it every
Wednesday. Jaguars.com. How many punter questions did you get?
That's settled down, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, a little
not
bit.
Not when I go speak.
I mean, the questions, they were screened. I imagine, we used to go about 35 minutes on it, and I imagine if they had not been screened, it would, you could answer punter questions all day.
I literally last, since the draft, every time I've spoken, with Team Teal and the Jaguars, I literally say, I'll take questions now, but punter questions are not allowed.
Yeah, I'll answer one or two. I mean, it's a topic, but it's I'm a bit worn out on it.
A bit?
A bit.
My
a bit.
Phone, I don't know about your guys, my phone blew up on, I guess it had been Friday night.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's
that and the Twitter.
You got it, yeah.
It wasn't pleasant.
Well, the one good thing about Brian Anger, I know, John, you had a chance to talk with him. Good guy.
Well, and what really strikes you about Brian is it's good that he has the attitude he does, because I don't think he's going to be affected by any of the fallout, by any of the jokes, by any of the, of the questions. You really don't get the – he just strikes you as a guy who he knows he's good. He's not arrogant about it. He knows he has to perform and get better. But he's a really confident guy, and I think it's because he's been good for a long time, and he knows he's got a chance to be special.
Well, and if he's smart, which it sounds like he is, he'll embrace the whole the whole punter in the third round. Enjoy it.
He was a little uneasy with it when you talked to him, but by the end of the weekend, you could tell he kind of had his feet under him, and
he had enough reps to answer the questions.
Yeah,
just enjoy it.
It's an intimidating thing. I mean, he's a rookie coming into a town, and he's heard that people are angry about the pick. And, that's a tough situation. But you saw signs of him handling it well.
I can relate to that.
And that's something you wanted to hear.
Log, maybe you can –
Kindred spirit.
Maybe you can mentor the young man how to handle it.
Whew.
Just keep hitting the ball like he was in the minicamp.
You know, the funny thing is if – he performs like we expect him to, and they drafted him there.
People
they
will love
literally there will be a cult following of Brian Anger. There will be.
And I've had nearly as many, believe it or not, people writing trying to find out where they can get an Anger jersey.
Oh, absolutely. I'm telling you what.
It's going to be very polarized.
He'll be a cult hero.
He'll be a cult hero if he does what we expect him to do.
19, folks. Get your 19 jerseys.
I love it.
And what a name.
Fun.
He's got the greatest football name ever.
It's great.
Brian Anger.
Anger management. You see, that'd be a little section in the stadium, right?
Have you thought about different things, that different headlines that you can come up with articles where he wins a game?
It's going to be terrific. And
do you write your own headlines? You don't have a staff that does that for you?
No, I don't.
There is
no staff.
Do you write your own articles?
Very rarely.
Okay.
What's that commercial where the guy's got that easy button?
Staples.
Yeah, he's got like eight of himself. Well, that's John's staff.
What's interesting about Brian, though, on a serious note, is when talking to him, he really didn't have any idea. He had played soccer, but it wasn't like he was this soccer phenom or thought he had a huge leg. He basically went to a kicking camp.
Great story at Jaguars.com.
And he was a field goal kicker. And he went to a kicking camp and kind of went over to a punting drill. And all of a sudden, he started booming punts.
Yeah, and who was it that told him, son, give up kicking, you're a punter?
I can't remember the name, but it was the guy who runs his camp in California, and the guy said, you're not kicking anymore. This is your future. Because there was that kind of special that people who do that saw it immediately. So, you know, this guy is a prodigy when it comes to punting, like it or not.
Boy, does he get his punting foot
I was telling you watching the video. I mean, it's like
way up. I mean, like over his head, like a certain Raider used to.
I'm looking forward to watching him kick live.
Yeah. And then something on the line.
And his comments after the first day was, you know, he just didn't feel quite right.
Right.
I remember reading that and going, he didn't feel quite right.
And Malarkey said the next day, I think it was Mike, either Mike or John said, if that wasn't quite right, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that was bad, that's good. Because, again, his miss hits were going 45 yards with a 4.8, 4.9, which is what, you know, for normal punters, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's that.
Now, OTA is coming up next week, right?
Start Tuesday.
Tuesday. I'm taking a little family vacation next week, so.
Another one?
Better get him in before the Team Teal caravan.
The caravan's coming up, baby. I got to get him out of the way.
Where are you headed?
Saturday, I fly to L.A., the USC induction to the Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
And then all week, spending the week on Newport Beach with the whole family.
We don't get a ding for the self-touting of the Hall of Fame?
He asked me what I'm doing. I'm not self-touting anything, Ozone. You blast the Ozone 10 times a show, and now you're...
And I always get ding. There was no ding. I just got a ding.
No, I got the golf cup. I got the golf cup.
Definitely.
But
standing ovation.
But I am looking forward to hearing from you guys how it looks out there with Blaine under center, Lauren Robinson, Justin Blackman on one side, whoever the slot's going to be in that first offense, and see if there's a marked difference with Mike Malarkey and his staff coaching what that passing game looks like. I'm looking forward to that. I won't be here, but I'm looking forward to hearing.
We'll look at that while you rest up for your Team Teal caravan.
Yeah, we got set.
I'm going to plug the dates. All right.
You got it right there. It's easy.
Got it.
It starts June 1st.
Thursday, May 17th.
No. You're talking you're doing the rallies. We have a caravan
as
well.
Okay, I'm talking about the rallies that are coming up, and these are all around Jacksonville, four counties.
Yeah.
May 17th, that's a Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m.
That's Nassau County. You're hosting that one.
I will be there.
I'll be in California. Jeff is
Fernandina Beach.
A guest appearance for all the people up in Nassau County.
May 24th at the World Golf
Village.
Hall of Fame.
Yep, that's St. John's. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thursday, May 24th.
At the IMAX down there we're doing it.
Yep.
It'll be outstanding.
June 14th, Clay County. Clay County.
We'll be rocking.
Moose Haven.
We will be rocking Clay County. Clay County, a lot of Jag fans out there.
And then Friday, June 15th,
is the
Team Teal Rally
at the zoo. Northside, we're going to the zoo. Players will be out there. I think a bunch of the rookies are going to come to sign autographs. We'll be out there. But, and then we go to the caravan. We're doing a seven-city caravan tour this year. We're going to Volusia County. We're going to Flagler in Palm Coast. We're going to go to Gainesville. Freddie T's making an appearance both at Dayton in Volusia and Palm Coast Gainesville. It'll be Freddie and I. Mike Malarkey, another Gator, Jeremy Mincy in Gainesville. So I'll be taking probably third or fourth seat at the Gainesville.
You'll be happy to.
Just hanging back and just, hey, let these guys bask in the limelight. And then we're going to Savannah, Brunswick, Valdosta, and Waycross. So seven cities, 7 days. I think we start June 1st, and the last one is June 9th. And we take one day off there on a Sunday. And
When you go to Waycross,
yep.
I'm sure it's
good. I love Waycross. It's a great place.
Little restaurant there. Very, very good. Hog and Bones.
Hog and Bones.
Hog and Bones.
What do you eat there?
Oh,
what do you eat there?
Everything.
I actually get the hog and slaw.
Ooh, I love slaw.
Which is a shredded pork sandwich with coleslaw on top of Texas garlic toast.
Oh.
And they've got the best sauce known to man. They just call it the signature sauce.
Okay.
Hog and Bone.
Hog and Bones.
I'll be there.
there's resolve in there.
No, I'll be there.
It's a little place when you're coming in from Jacksonville on the left.
Yeah. So, but we're excited. Hey. A lot going on with Team Teal, the rallies. Also next week, we're doing the Jacksonville Golf and Country Club. So a lot going on, and I'm excited about the caravans. It's part
they
of.
They should have done it years ago.
Well, you and I have talked about that, and there's
reason. It's a great time to do it now.
It is a great time. And the commitment by Shad Khan, Mark Lamping, the new president, with their support, Team Teal, really kicking this off. And it's going to be a lot of fun. The goal of what the Jaguars are going to do over the next several years, it's going to be forever, is we are not going to neglect the core, which is right here, this five-county area, mainly Duval. We are going to have a strong presence, continue to do what we've done with Team Teal, reaching out, doing all the fun things year-round. This isn't just a one-time thing we do. We do it year-round. And what we're going to build on that is we're going to make the Jaguars a regional brand. And there's going to be a concerted effort with the caravan, but then following up throughout the year. And it'll even expand. It'll be 7 this year. I would bet it's 10 cities next year. And then on top of that, don't be surprised. You know, I don't know if anything's official, but and we've all talked about this before, but then you're going to see the international as well. So a lot of great things. We've been talking on the field, but a lot of great things going off the field, in the community, in the effort that under the leadership of Shad Khan, the organization's making to really get out there. And these aren't retail sales calls trying to push tickets. This is literally just getting out players, coaches, autographs, bounce houses, and just going out and telling the fans, listen, we thank you, we need you, and you know, we're here and we want to be a part of your community. So it's a lot of fun. I look forward to it.
All right, time for a break. We'll wrap this show up in just a moment on Jaguars This Week here on Jaguars Radio. All right, about 7 minutes left in the program this evening. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, John Osher. You can join us, 355-NFL-1, if you can find room to squeeze in somewhere here.
Yeah, I wouldn't call, because yeah. I doubt we're taking any calls tonight.
Now, so, the
do you think?
The last 5 minutes, you know, what I wanted to kind of look at was, I mean, right now, I think the league's got a problem they need to clean up. This whole bounty gate, suspensions, the appeal process with the players, to me, that needs to be cleaned up.
Well, let me say there's two things. And I wasn't here last week because we had the Team Teal captain meeting, and I don't know if you guys addressed it or not. They have that issue with the bounty, and which is connected to the head injury issue and the death of Junior Seau.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. We didn't get into the whole bounty game.
Right, but those two things play together, player safety. I mean, I had lunch with Junior 2.5 weeks before he shot himself, and I would have never guessed in a million years. We sat there all day. And but the league has a major issue on its hand. And it might just be a perception issue because it's a long leap at this point to connect CTE, concussions to CTE, to depression, to players killing themselves. It's a huge leap. People kill themselves, unfortunately, all the time. Depression is real, but people get depressed because of financial issues. And you have to look at each player's case, and I don't know the particulars of Dave Durison or anything, but are there financial problems? Are there relationship problems? Are there problems in other areas? Because those things, now does the concussions compound all that and make it worse? We don't know, but it's a dangerous precedent, but the press is doing that. The media today is making the jump that concussions cause CTE, which I'm sure they do, and CTE is going to kill football players. Football players are going to kill themselves. I would bet anything that if you cracked open Jeff and I's brain, there's probably areas of our brain that are affected by CTE. But the media has jumped to that conclusion that football is killing people. That coupled with the fact of player safety and the bounty gate and the Saints coming out and saying they were purposely trying to hurt people.
Well, and then you add into that 1,800 former players that are suing the league.
Suing the league that somehow, which I don't necessarily agree with. I don't think, I mean, I have a hard time believing the league knew about CTE when no one knew about it a couple years ago, and that somehow the league was covering up this huge conspiracy, knowing players were going out and having these issues. But so all this put up into a pot, and the media, and I'm not blaming the media, is stirring it up, because in our culture today, we like to blame somebody. It has to be somebody's fault. Why Junior Seau killed himself, and I don't know why, but it has to be someone's fault, so let's blame the NFL.
And right now, that's the nut graph in every story.
Right. That's where they go. And I compare a parallel line, which Jaguar fans will understand, and I'm not comparing the two. One's much more serious. Obviously, people killing themselves is much more serious. But if you go back to the issue of whether Jacksonville is a viable NFL market or not, even after we had no blackouts for 2 years, mm-hmm. what was the story? The story in the media was that no one goes to Jaguar games, they don't support the Jaguars, because that's what the media decided the story was going to be. In a similar...
A very similar
case is the media has decided that CTE causes depression and people kill themselves, so therefore, make the connection, football is dangerous and it's causing people to kill themselves. To the point where ex-players are questioning, saying, I wouldn't let my kids play. I mean, it is a major issue that the league has on its hands that they're going to have to wade through very carefully, because they cannot come out and say that CTE doesn't cause depression and it's not the NFL's fault.
The league can handle the one issue with Bountygate. To me, they've been very reserved on giving the information that led to the player suspensions. And I think if they would give the public the information and say, here's why, here's what we have, I think it would be easier for that to be
But here's the thing, but you have to – my fear of that – and I agree. I mean, I think that – we think that would be easier, but we don't know what was in there. Does it make it
why
even –
why not?
Well, because what if it's even worse than we're reporting? What if there was, you know – it was, I mean, the worst-case scenario of people purposely, you know, going after people.
Yeah, but, Tony, I mean, you would have saw that. I mean, the game film, the television doesn't lie.
But I think what the league is doing about it, or has tried to do about it, I think you saw it at the beginning of last year. The overwhelming reaction to any violent hit, the rules changes.
To.
Right, and I think that's the direction we're going. And
they had to.
The conflict there is people didn't like those rules. People don't like them, so that's going to be a
– it's funny.
It's going to continue to be a push and pull.
During the season, they don't like that rule.
Right.
Those rules. During the off season, when the media starts talking about concussions, brain damage, and people killing themselves, they kill the NFL for being too violent.
And that's going to be the unsolvable conflict going forward.
I mean, it's just like, where do you end up? It's a very interesting story, and I think it could greatly affect the game of football.
But the Bountygate, I mean, they could be a little bit more forthcoming.
And I understand what you're saying
with information on that, because now you're going to have appeals, and it's just going to drag on and on and on.
Do you think maybe though that they don't, because maybe they don't have as much information to make those harsh
penalties?
I don't know. But they want to make the harsh penalties to send the message to the public that they're doing everything they can to protect players. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting strategy for the NFL. I mean, it's a messaging strategy for the NFL of how they handle it.
There's some pretty stiff accusations came out today.
Anthony Hargroves?
Yes.
Yeah, about Joe Vitt?
Well, you had Hargroves' accusations, and then obviously Ginsburg, the attorney for Jonathan Vilma, is a legal powerhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! It could get ugly.
But we may be talking about this all summer long. Probably will.
Unfortunately.
All right, guys. Safe travels. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. See you Friday night.